You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, this is Jay Horowitz with another edition of Amazing Mets Alumni Podcast. My special guest this week is, you know, Art Shamsky from the 69 Miracle Mets. Art, you told me a story the other day. You came to the Mets in 68 from the Reds, and the first time you told Tom Seaver, I guess a year before, you had hit a three-run homer against him. What did he say to you?
Yeah, I faced Tom in 67 when I was with the Reds, Jay, and I hit a meaningless three-run home run in the ninth inning at Shea Stadium with the Reds when I was there, and made the score 7-3, and I think that's how the game finished up. And that was his first year in Major Leagues, and, you know, of course, you knew that he was going to be a pretty good pitcher. I think he won 17 games, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, rookie of the year, too.
And rookie of the year. And then when I got traded over the next year, I came over and, you know, I didn't really know too many people. I knew Eddie Krempel. I knew a couple guys I'd played against in the big leagues and maybe in the minor leagues. And went and said hello to a few guys and went up and said hello to Seaver. And he said to me, you know, I remember you. I remember that day in June. He had the date down and everything.
Really?
And he said, this will be the last time we talk about that game, the home run. That was it. So we never talked about it again.
You were fortunate not to experience the losing. You got there in 68. Could you sense, when he got there in March of 68, could you sense things were turning around or not really?
Well, you know, when you played against the Mets in those early years, and, you know, they were really not a good team. And if you didn't win two out of three, you know, you thought it was a bad series because, as you mentioned, they were losing 100 games every year, finishing last. But when I got over to the team, and which was a new experience for me, I'd never been traded before, and I came the same time that Gil Hodges came as manager, Tommy Agee, Al Weiss, J.C. Martin. A few of us came around the same time, and even though when I first heard that I got traded to the Mets, there was a little bit of disappointment. I wasn't crazy about the city of New York. The Mets were a losing team, which all goes to what your question was originally. When I got there, I sensed a little bit of a change. Not that I'd been there earlier, but when Gil Hodges took over, he was a no-nonsense person. I remember the very first day in spring training in 68, he said, he had a meeting, and he said, I just want everybody to know that you will not be the same old Mets as you were in the past. So that told me right off the bat he was not going to tolerate losing so much and poor play. And I think right away everybody got a sense that things were going to change. And even though in 68 we finished ninth, I believe a half game out of last place, there was only one National League at that point. I think everybody got a sense that things were going to change. And who knew we were going to win a World Series in 1969. But I think everybody felt that they were on the right track with Gil Hodges as manager.
Art, you were one of the few guys who saw Tom. You went out there to his winery in California. What was it like walking through his house with the trophies and the bowls and the winery? You know, I mean, he was a perfectionist with the wine stuff, too. What was it like just seeing all those things firsthand?
Well, I was just in the process of writing the book After the Miracle, which was coincide with the 50th anniversary. And this was 2017. And I knew that Tom wasn't traveling anymore because he had just announced that he was, or the family had just announced that he was having these problems, this illness, and that he wasn't going to do any traveling. So we decided to go out there because I didn't want to do an interview with him on the phone. And when we got there and were lucky enough to spend a day with him, I was just amazed at the beauty of where he lived and how much he was into this wine business and the acres that he had for growing grapes. It was kind of a sentimental journey for all of us. I took myself and three other teammates went with me, and we just—it was just an incredible time. But we reminisced about 1969, of course. But just spending time with Tom and talking about all of the accomplishments that he did, and all the good things that happened to us as a team, and just spending time out there and looking at all his awards and trophies and feeling like we were all part of this wonderful experience in 1969. But it was very special to be out there and see how he was doing this business now with the wine business and making another life for himself. But It was bittersweet in a sense because when we said goodbye after spending 8 or 9 hours together on that Saturday afternoon out in Calistoga, it was bittersweet in a sense that we had already lost a number of players on that team, and now that he had just had announced his illness and there was other guys who were not doing well, you just didn't know if we were going to see all these people again, and so that was a little bittersweet for me.
Well, you know, April 15th, opening day, we put the receiver statue goes up. What is that going to mean to you when you see that? I mean, a symbol of everything from losers to lovable losers to winners. Just transformed the whole organization. What will it mean to you when you see the statue go?
He's really the face of the franchise, and I'm sure as we go along, there'll be other great players that come along, David Wright, Mike Piazza, et cetera, et cetera. But Tom was really the face that really changed the perception of it. And along with Gil Hodges, I must say, Gil was certainly a catalyst in everything we did in that accomplishments in 1969. But Tom, realistically, is when you talk about the Mets in the early years in 1969, everybody talks about Tom Seaver, and I think it'll be a tribute. I wish it would have happened years earlier, but who knows?
Howard, I just want to touch on some of the guys who are unfortunately not here and tell me what they meant to the team. Like Tug McGraw, what's your first impression about Tug, what he meant to the team?
Well, Frank, as I call him, Frank McGraw was just very special. He was the kind of guy that at any moment, at any time, at any circumstance, he was able to say anything that was on his mind, and he was a great teammate, a real character, and when he got going, he made everybody feel.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Important and funny, and he was great, and I just never forget some of the banter that went on between him and Jerry Kuzman and some of the guys. And Tug passed away way too young. I think he was only 59 when he passed away.
We get Don Clendenin in June that year, and I mean, people liken him to the Keith Hernandez trade, the same thing. Power in the locker room. And he was a lawyer, went down to be a lawyer. What was he like?
He was a lawyer, but I'm not sure I would have had him work on any even traffic tickets for me. But yeah. I always told him that, and he used to get upset with me because of that. But he was very, very bright, and when he got over to the team, it really changed the outlook of the team because he was a right-hand power hitter with the head experience and been around and been on some winning teams. And he like you said, he was a lawyer, but he was also a clubhouse lawyer, if you know, in the sense that there's an old phrase, clubhouse lawyers, and those are guys that know a little bit about everything and a lot about nothing. But in his case, he knew a lot about everything. He was a very bright guy, and he kept us loose. I mean, I'll give you an example. If you made an error in a game, say on a night game, or you struck out in a situation, nobody would say anything to you after the game. But the next day, you'd walk in the locker room, and he would be all over you about whatever you did to not help the team win. So he was quite a character, and you had to go right back at him, otherwise he would just keep getting on you. But he was part of that mix, Jay. That the locker room was such an incredible group of guys, and Ed Charles was just the opposite.
I was going to ask you about Ed Charles.
Yeah, Eddie was the kind of guy that if you had a bad game or an 0-for-4, he would come up to you, put his arm around you, and he had been through so many experiences, and not necessarily good experiences, as somebody growing up and then trying to get to the big leagues. He was held back in the big leagues because of the color of his skin, and he was one of these guys that he understood emotions, and he would make you feel like whatever happened to you, it was a better day tomorrow. And Eddie was really the catalyst, I like to say, that held that locker room together, the clubhouse together. With all the fun guys and the craziness that went on, Ed Charles was the kind of guy that really kept everything in perspective, and he was the kind of guy that every team needs. I really have to say that. And again, he passed away, and so many good memories from Ed Charles and Don Clendenin and Tug and those guys.
How about some of the pictures that didn't have the headlines? You know, Don Cardwell, Cal Kuntz, and Jack DeLauro all played big parts, and you don't really hear a lot about them.
Maybe. Yeah, you know, they're not unappreciated by somebody like myself. And
no,
guys,
but I'm just who I wanted to bring
yeah,
it up.
Yeah, yeah, I totally agree with you. But I think one of the beauties of that 69 team is that when you talk about it, I think anybody who understands the game of baseball knows that how much these guys contributed to the success of the team. You don't just talk about the greatness of Tom Seaver and Kuzman and Jones and Agee and some of the other guys, but you talk about Al Weiss and you talk about Don Cardwell and Cal Kuntz and you talk about Jack DeLauro and you talk about all the guys who helped contributed something to us being successful. And I think that really is the true legacy of that team. And I think really goes back to the way Gil Hodges managed. He got everybody involved in the game. He platooned in four or five positions, and while nobody really liked that situation, the reality of it was helping us win ball games. So we accepted, and we had so much respect for Gil.
Al Weiss once told me a story. He said that Gil used to get him in here in June and July to prepare for the postseason. He winds up getting the deciding hit in the first game of the series, the second game of the series, right? And he hit a home run in game five. So it's the perfect example about an irregular getting a big hit.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And Al was a really important part of that team. And, again, he's one of those guys that when you talk about it, everybody knows it, the name Al Weiss. And so, for all of us, that I think that's great to be able to go back and look at some of these guys who we still have the nucleus around, thank God for that, but some of these guys who really were part of that team and very important in the success of the team. And I'm really happy that when we talk about it now, 53 years later, we still talk about these guys who at some point contributed to the success of that 69 Met team.
Yeah, unfortunately, one thing I forgot to bring up in the beginning, probably is not known by a lot of people. You went over to, Buddy Harrelson is not well right now. He's in a home in Long Island. But you went over to his house and had a catch with him to try and cheer him up. And Buddy, tell the people, it was a really nice thing to do. I know his wife Kim asked you to go. And how did that come about?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, I'd been meaning to go out and visit with him because I knew that he was really going through a tough time. And it was at home at the time. And so we arranged with Kim Harrelson to come out and spend some time. And she said, don't be surprised at some of the things that he says. If he doesn't do this or he doesn't do that. So I was pretty much ready for anything. And luckily he did. She said my name and he recognized me. And we were talking for a bit. And she said, well, why don't you guys go out and have a catch? And actually I brought my glove because she said he might want to do that, really not knowing seriously if he wanted to do it. And that was such an incredible 10-15 minutes, Jay. I can't tell you what a thrill it was for me to be able to sit down there outside. Went out in this front lawn and we just kind of soft tossed maybe 15-20 feet. And what was interesting about that whole time is that his motor skills were so fine. He was going through the beginning stages of Alzheimer's, but he caught the ball, threw it back to me. Right. We were just warming up before a game. And for me to be able to do that, and I tweeted it out, a little footage of us doing that, and I must have had, I don't know, I had an incredible response from people who commented about they were so happy to see him and know that he was still able to do that, but it was interesting he had not lost anything of those motor skills. And I don't know the situation now. I'm sure it's a little bit different, but back then, a couple of years ago, it was just for me to be able to play catch with a teammate and be able to reminisce with him like that was great.
I think he's the only guy to have two World Series in 69 and 86. He's the only, he was a coach on 86, and I think he's the only one from the Mets, at least.
Yeah, and barely lost out in 73, too. So, so more power to him.
I know you've written two books. How did you get into the writing part of it? Did you something you wanted to do? I mean,
it's interesting, Jay. I wanted to write about that year, 69, way back. I remember we did a 25th anniversary celebration in 94, believe it was. And I saw the adulation from fans 25 years later and how important that team was 25 years from the day we won and that whole year. And, of course, that was the year of the baseball strike, and that was a tough year for baseball in general. But I saw the love and admiration from fans, and so I said, I think I want to write about that year. And it wasn't only just because of the 69 Mets. It was the year the Jets won the Super Bowl in 69 in January that year, and then the Knicks won the NBA championship in May of 70. But what was interesting about the three teams is that nobody had ever won before.
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
You know, you talk about those teams, but everybody thinks the Knicks had won before, and of course the Jets had never won before.
Right, right.
And so I knew there was a story there. So that book, Magnificent Seasons, is about the three teams and how they were all started and how that year happened. And so for me, it was just a labor of love, and I'd never written before, but I did. I spent hours at the public library doing research, and that was when they had to go look through old film of the papers and everything.
Right.
So for me, it was really a labor of love, and the book turned out really nice, and I still have it on my website, and people still want to buy it. And the second book was the one about the 50th anniversary after the miracle. And what's interesting about that idea, and I wrote it with a gentleman by the name of Eric Sherman, who had written a number of books on the Mets and was a big Met fan. And so he knew Met history. But I realized that over the years, and you might be able to say this is true or not true, but I think more books have been written about the 69 Mets than any sports team in the history of sports.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt
it. I mean, I don't know the number, but there's so many books written about it. So I didn't want to write a book just about, you know, how we won and all the same things that have been written before. And so I thought about it, and what was important to me was the relationships that developed from us winning that year and have maintained for us over the years. And part of the reason that people still love that team and the relationships are so solid is that guys went through some really bad years, like Eddie Cranepool and Ron Swoboda and Tug McGraw, who were there years before we won the World Series and saw all the losing that you mentioned before. And so for me, I think writing about that relationship for guys who saw the bad and the good, the bad and the ugly with the Mets in those early years, and then us winning the World Series was very important. And then talk about how 50-something years later we still remain friends and brought us so much closer together because we were on some bad teams. And even in 68 was not a good team. We finished ninth that year. So for me, writing about that was very important as opposed to just talking about, you know, this particular game or that particular game. And so that's how that book came about.
I read them both.
Thank you.
Well, you're getting ready for you're getting some warm-ups, some batting practice for old-timers, Day game?
Well, here's the thing. I worked out and stretched my arm a little bit. And, you know, a few years ago when I would do this, I would start on the mound and then work my way now over the years to halfway to the mound. And today, I'm not sure, maybe 15, 20 feet, maybe underhand.
It should be a fun day. We have about 60 former players coming back, all the decades. And first time we've done it since 1994. So August 27th should be a good day at Citi Field.
Oh, okay. I'm looking forward to that, seeing some of the guys that... It's great that the Mets are doing it. I know Mr. Cohn is...
Yeah, he's at back of us 100%, which
is great. Really into the history of the team and look for great things from the Mets this year, and hopefully we'll
keep
our fingers crossed.
Thanks for your time, Art. I appreciate
it. My pleasure, Jay. Yeah.